Oh, she's so cute though that she's got their little arms crossed. It's very the look is very like, are you kidding me right now? But I love it.
That's my girl.
Ding, gotta ding, love ding. The cat hair on the leggings too. That Bruh. Just makes it.
These are the yucky old ones too, and it's the only ones that really attract it. You know, I finally got some that repel it, which is fantastic. It is not these.
Noted.
These say bring it on.
0 out of 10 review.
Yeah.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm Blair.
And I'm Kirsten, and we are Mediocre Content. And happy...
I'm, like, looking at your mouth move, and it's, like, not... I'm, like, looking at your mouth move and say it in the microphone, and then I respond to your mouth movements, and then...
Stop looking at my mouth movements.
It plays as audio... And then your lip flaps.
That's worse. If anybody's curious, we're having a bit of technical difficulties.
I'm watching your mouth move, and this is...
It's not working. This is normal, though. It's any time that we try to record something these days, there's somewhat of a lag. So, listener, I hope you enjoy the weird back and forth.
We're trying really hard.
We really are.
And the weird pauses, too.
Yeah. just don't acknowledge them and they're not happening. It's okay.
It's fine.
Yeah. With that though, we'll just go ahead and since there's going to be a lag anyway, we'll just go ahead and disclaim, I guess.
All right. So the first thing you need to know is that Kirsten does not have time to edit out all the pauses. This is mediocre content at its best. Okay.
I really don't.
Disclaimer. We are bad at podcasting. we're not we're 50, wait, probably like 60 episodes, 60 some odd episodes into this. What is 69?
69. Oh, wow. 69.
Ooh. 69th episode.
Chugga chugga choo choo.
Oh God. So we're 69 episodes into this and we're still bad at it. So well, maybe one day we'll
Nothing
see.
Nothing has improved.
We're not experts on anything. You know this already.
Mm-hmm.
And if you any comments about what we have to say, then share them on Apple reviews, Spotify reviews, our Instagram DMs, personal or the mediocre content account. That's fine. Come visit us on Twitch every other Thursday.
Yeah.
And you can yell at us there. We would love to hear it
in chat.
But otherwise, you know, you guys are on your own. Take what we say with a grain of salt. We love you very much and we try really hard, but sometimes it just doesn't happen and we get the facts wrong and that's just the way it is. You know, that's life.
Or we have Blair's crappy Wi-Fi and
also that. Also that.
Lag.
Yeah, or you have Blair's crappy Wi-Fi. We do have a commercial for that, and maybe Kirsten will be nice and put that commercial in this particular
I'll find it
episode, so then you'll hear it after you listen to my crappy Wi-Fi for 30 minutes.
It's true. But you also have the good news.
That's where
I think.
We're at today, guys.
Yeah,
that's where we're at. I'm gonna do the good news with my crappy Wi-Fi.
Do it.
Here we go. Maybe this will be better. Maybe we're turning over a new leaf. It's going to be good. Okay. Women are better at exercising.
Done. That's it. That's
congratulations
the
whole thing. To us.
Claps. That's it.
That's the story. Researchers have discovered a quote unquote gender gap between men and women when it comes to working out. And it favors women, which is great for us. Sorry, men. Data analyzed from 412,000 adults in the U.S. showed that females get more heart health benefit from exercise than males. They can get the same benefits from exercise as men, but with less effort, according to Professor Martha Gulati, Director of Preventative Cardiology at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in LA. She explained that women have historically lagged behind men in how often they engage in meaningful exercise. And she quote, she says, "The beauty of this study is learning that women can get more out of each minute of moderate to vigorous activity than men do." A team analyzed 22 years of data gathered by the National Health Interview Survey and published their findings in the Journal of American College of Cardiology. They revealed that women can exercise less often than men, yet receive greater heart gains. Quote, "For adults engaging in any regular physical activity compared to being inactive, mortality risk was lower," she's the study senior author, Professor Susan Chang, stated. Intriguingly, though, mortality risk was reduced by 24% in women and 15% in men. So the team studied moderate to vigorous physical activity, such as brisk walking or cycling,
So brisk.
and found that men reached their maximal survival benefit from doing this level of exercise for about 5 hours per week, while women achieved the same amount or the same maximum benefit only for only 2.5 hours per week. So that's amazing for us because we can exercise less and still get the same cardiovascular benefit, which is great for
Beautiful.
us.
Love that.
When it came to weightlifting and other muscle strengthening body exercises, men reached their peak from doing 3 sessions per week compared to women who only need one.
Oh,
Yeah.
okay.
So you can lift weights once, walk twice a week. You're receiving a better cardio and strengthening exercise benefit than your male person in your life
Honestly, this is
who's
great
doing it like
because,
five times a
like,
week.
getting to the gym and stuff has been more and more difficult recently. So,
Totally,
yeah.
totally. So that is not to say you should work out less. I mean, do what works for your body,
Right.
obviously. But I
Right.
think that it's very exciting and it's just like it calms me down as someone who is a busy human being, as we all
Yes.
are. And sometimes I feel crappy about not going to the gym one day, but maybe I was exhausted and like didn't want to do it, but I did it 2 other times this week and I'm like, great, well, my heart seems to be fine.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's how it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's your good news. I'm sorry this is
Amazing.
not great news for men, but keep doing what you're doing. It's
You're
fine.
doing great.
Current gender roles allow you to go to the gym more anyway, so. All right. Gardening is good for the environment. Gardeners are playing a critical role in detecting invasive plants before it's too late, according to a new study. Along with detecting, gardeners are best positioned to act on the information by taking measures to prevent the spread of plants they detect. Kirsten, who texted you?
It's literally work because that's what happens when you're trying to do two things at once.
Yes. All right, nobody out her for
I'm
working
working.
from home and also doing the pod.
I'm a busy woman. I'm a businesswoman.
Yeah, nobody say anything to her boss, okay? She, as far as we know, she was at work this whole time and
Am
not on the
technically.
pod.
I am technically. It totally counts. Oh my God.
Yeah. Let's see. So, an online survey survey has revealed that even though gardeners aren't scientists, they're as effective as a community of identifying future invaders or ornamental plants that could become an invasive species. And for those who don't know what an invasive species is, it's a plant that comes to a new area and basically takes over and kills all the native plants because it has, similar to an invasive species, it has nothing to like kill it or eat it. Recent research has put together a short list of these decorative plants that have the potential to spread out of control and become harmful to the environment. The researchers from the University of Reading and the Royal Horticulture Society, this is, I'm going to go ahead and assume this is in Britain,
Yeah.
studied survey answers from 558 gardeners on ornamentals that showed invasive behavior in their gardens. The results published in the journal Neobiota identified 251 different plants as potential invaders that they believe need their invasive potential in Britain and Ireland assessed. Quote, the simple yet structured scheme we developed was used to prioritize which of the around 70,000 ornamental plants available to buy in the UK could be future invaders. So those are plants that are already for sale at your local gardening nursery or whatever. This is crucial for, quote, this is crucial for focusing research efforts and resources such as conducting formal risk assessments to explore the invasive potential of those shortlisted. The team encourages gardeners to get involved in helping identify future invaders through an ongoing project called Plant Alert, run by the Botanical Society of Britain and Ireland and Coventry University. Let's see. It is a good point. Invasive species are uniquely disruptive through no fault of their own for their ability to exploit niches in a local ecosystem. The niche could be a certain height, for example, where no other native species grow to occupy, or it could be that a particular species grows extremely fast and monopolizes available sunlight. It could involve it, jinx, it could involve the
But
relationship between plant and pollinator, like in Italy, where the North American black locust tree attracts disproportionate numbers of pollinators. So, if you know anything about gardening, the UK wants you to tell them about it,
true.
and let you know or let them know what kind of invasive species live in your garden because they want to know.
Oh my goodness. I've heard
Right,
even
Jinx?
I don't know if it's like
Yay.
invasive necessarily, but I've heard if you plant mint, you better hope that it's in one sectioned place where it never touches anything else, apparently.
Oh.
Yeah, apparently it just runs rampant as soon as you plant it. Yeah.
Cool.
Meh. I don't know. I don't know if that's invasive.
I don't know.
I like mint though.
I don't know enough about gardening to know anything.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. I will pet you. Calm down. It's
Don't
fine.
worry,
He's like
Jinx.
walking back and forth, like, Mom,
Don't
Mom, pet
worry.
me.
I'll take over from here, sweet little kitty boy. So that you and your mom can bond in the background. Oh my goodness. Well, thank you so much for the good news. It's fantastic good news. And I also have good news. The good news is we're doing an episode about trains, which is fantastic. We've done planes, we've done subs. I guess we need to do boats at some point. Maybe I have it. I don't remember.
Did we not already do boats?
I feel like it may have like circled into subs at a little bit, or I don't know that we've done boats. I feel like I would have known if we've done boats. Have we done boats? Listener, you tell us if we've done boats.
We've done cruises, I think. So that touched a little bit
Oh,
on boats, but not
okay.
really.
Yeah. Don't you worry, though. Don't you worry. We will cover a bunch of unexciting topics in the future.
Unexciting.
Just you
Oh,
wait.
I was thinking, I need to add one. I think I
Okay.
know. Oh, I was gonna do snails. That's what I was gonna
Oh,
do.
snails are
Because
great.
stop it.
Can you do a combined snails and slugs episode? That would be
Yeah, because I was thinking the other
fantastic.
day, so like when we were out walking,
Yes.
at night,
Yes.
typically we go and there's like snails crossing the sidewalk and we have to
Yeah.
be really careful to not step on
Yes.
them.
Yes.
And it's
Crunch, crunch,
very
crunch.
traumatizing. I won't tell you. It's
I don't want to know.
stop.
I don't
Ooh.
want to
I am not a snail murderer. I am not gonna say that. Okay.
Yes, but we
But
should
I
do an
was
episode.
wondering, like, if the snail, like, do they grow with their shell? Do they find new shells like hermit crabs? Like, do they become
Oh.
slugs at some point? Like, what's the vibe? I
That's a
need to
good
know.
question.
Yeah,
Yes, I think that's important.
so I'm gonna find out for you guys and we'll do a podcast about it, okay?
So great. Okay, well, Similar to how we start every pod, probably snails and slugs included, we're going to start by taking it all the way back to the ancient times and work our way up to modern times, of course. So we start with the origins, and the post track is one of the oldest known causeways, and this is built in England around 3838 BC, which is insane. And in ancient Greece, it's believed that people and animals pulled wheeled vehicles across grooves in limestone, creating a way in which you could guide a wagon along a designated route. So that makes sense. It's kind of like a mine cart more than anything, I guess. And these tracks were used for hundreds of years. Although these designs were modest, they did offer some kind of a basic concept of railway transportation. And this was important because it's like any good invention. Like you get an idea, you have a prototype that maybe it wasn't exactly used for, and suddenly it becomes useful for that new invention. It's great. Building blocks. They were impressive for the time, but it did end up taking quite a few centuries before the true origins of what we now know as the railway began. And it started with wooden rails in 1500-ish. In Germany. These were some of the first modern railways, and one of the most famous ones is still standing today and is known as the Rheinzug, and it utilized what's called a funicular system, and this depended on a steep slope and a hemp rope for transportation. So it wasn't something that was kind of very well controlled, probably. Like it just, you're at the mercy of gravity, it sounds like. The effectiveness of wooden rail soon became popular in Europe, particularly for miners. So that makes sense because the first iteration in Greece was probably used for something similar. And yeah.
Let's pause for just a brief second because I want you to know that you're like very delayed and also you're cutting in and out. But I know that it's recording because but I just probably won't talk very much so that way we can get through it and it'll sound okay. And then we can like
It's
go
fine.
and then hopefully if I catch anything that seems like I should comment, I'll comment. But otherwise, I'm just gonna let you roll.
That's fine.
Okay?
Let us
Because I
roll.
don't know what you're saying most of the time.
It's okay. It's about right. I'll cut that bit out too. They
Okay.
don't need to know.
No, they don't.
Oh, this is great. We're professionals.
I'm so excited for stream later.
I know it's gonna be a wild one. These wagonways offered convenient and efficient ways to transport large amounts of cargo, but they did end up using horses, so it was more like a horse-drawn wagon as well, because it wasn't for people, it was just for the materials. And while wooden rails were the true beginning of the railroad industry, they would eventually be replaced by iron in the late 1700s, and tramways replaced wagonways. In the early 1800s, the invention of the first steam locomotive would be what actually pivots this whole situation of trains forward into the future. So, like most inventions, there was a frenzy to add to and modify designs of the steam engine. And this is, of course, to make it more effective and efficient. And that makes sense for any invention or anything that you're doing. Though the original design for the steam engine had been created in the 1600s, inventors were now tweaking it and thinking about how it could be used to power modern transportation. There was an inventor named Richard Trevithick, and he is credited as the inventor of the first practical steam-powered locomotive. And he introduced this invention to the world in 1804 in a Welsh mining town called Merthyr Tydfil. And though operable, it only averaged a speed of fewer than 10 miles per hour, which is very slow and not helpful at all. And in the years since, train speeds have, of course, dramatically evolved, and now our bullet trains can be like 300 miles per hour, which is also hard to think about. This train, though, Trevithick's train, is known as Penny Darren, and is often regarded as the first train, like we said, and many credit the Baltimore and Ohio Railway as the first U.S. railway chartered for the commercial transport of passengers and freight in the United States. From there, the rail system boomed in the U.S., becoming the dominant mode of travel because that's better than riding a horse. You don't have to tend the train too much like a horse, and you also don't have to worry about the horse being too tired or carrying too much. You just hop on the train, and you could go with your friends on the train. You can't really, I mean, you could ride two people on a horse. What? That sounded weird. You can ride with two people on a horse. You know what I meant. Don't laugh at me. You can ride two people on a horse. I wouldn't recommend it. Anyway, you get the point. More fun to be on the train. The steam engine was based on the idea of transforming the hot steam, of course, into the energy that would move the vessel, and it rapidly changed the landscape of the railroad industry. The early 1800s were full of innovation and tweaks to Thomas Newcomen's original steam engine. James Watt was instrumental in increasing the efficiency and bringing it to modern standards. Many prototypes and failed trials followed, of course, like many good inventions incur. And in 1829, engineer George Stephenson, Stephenson, sorry, George Stephenson, finally achieved the task as his steam-powered rocket became a commercial success. The rocket showed the world just how important the steam engine could be for transportation, and this dominated for more than a century. Of course, though, once it was developed, trains started carrying more cargo because it's easier to transport things like, goods and services on larger vessels than trying to cart them in horse and buggy for the most part. And these machines began to carry large
Totally makes
loads.
sense.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. They carried, of course, coal or passengers or luggage or crates of things to get them from city to city and town to town, etc. So that's kind of like the real beginnings of what we would now know as the modern train. And now we get into what is called the golden age of railroad. And it's because of the steam locomotive that, and the steel rails, those two things really made this whole system of trains boom. The invention and the evolution of the steam engine allowed trains to, of course, travel more rapidly as inventions and tweaks continued, and so passengers got from point A to point B faster than ever. Some still argued that traveling by horse was the more efficient way to travel.
Losers.
I know, like, get on the train. So it's just a little funny, but at the time, it just, I think it's just some people get, like today, you just get set in your
People get
ways.
scared of
They do.
change.
It's a lot. And the if you've never st all right, if you've never stood beside a true steam or coal powered, like old school train, these things are massive and a little intimidating. So I 100% also understand why you have like this horse that you've known your entire life, and then you have this literal crazy machine that's just like, yeah, I'm not gonna do anything. I'm just gonna take you where you wanna go. No, that's horrifying. I get
I
it.
mean, I feel like it's similar to the way people are afraid of airplanes,
Oh,
cough,
absolutely.
hint,
I would
ma'am.
gather to say it's accurate. I actually like trains though, so that's the weird thing.
At least trains are on the ground, you know?
Exactly. And then of course the Industrial Revolution was happening, so of course early 1800s factories were springing up and manufacturing was really taking off. So the extra bonus is if you have a vessel that can transport over large distances, heavy materials, and people can receive these quickly, efficiently, and help other towns populate and move into the Industrial Revolution as well. You kind of have like a perfect storm of industry and efficiency. And then, of course, that creates demand. So by now, the US had become a full-fledged country. They spanned thousands of miles. If you've never been here, we talk about it, lots of people talk about it. It's a massive country. So As a result, people had a reason to travel beyond their hometowns now, and of course, to see the nation in its entirety as these little towns and the train tracks were going through them. And so now you've got reliability, you've got wide ranges to explore, things are booming in these towns and becoming accessible, and that's really the golden age situation. Of course, as well, it wasn't long before, other things in history started to become, unfortunately, part of the conversation. So, we talked about this very briefly, when we discussed, like, even the submarine episode and the plane episode, when we were talking about how we can't really fully comprehend all of the elements because we talked about the commercial side, but there's also a military side to a lot of these inventions and a lot of these transportation vessels, and trains are actually one of them as well. So arguably the most obvious example of the impact in the United States were building the country, connecting the towns, expanding the landscape, etc. But it also had a big impact on the American Civil War time itself, and how troops and munitions and things of that nature also made its way to different areas. And of course, medical aid and, transporting the wounded and things like that. So it even impacts that portion of history as well. The
Totes.
Baltimore and Ohio Railroad are probably the most famous, I would say, in the States anyway. But much of the technology for railroads was copied from the British to create this idea. And in fact, some of the earlier locomotives were imported from England to be utilized. And the first railroad in the US was, of course, the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad. And that was completed and built in its entirety in 1827. There are other elements. The mania of railroad building had a host of various effects, and you might not think about it other than just like general progress. But there were three main factors that this article in particular wanted to highlight, and that was the financial, managerial, and personal elements that this age of trains impacted really heavily. Financially, the value of railroads skyrocketed during the 1800s. In the late 1800s, financiers from all over the world and primarily in Britain heavily invested in American railroads, and most of the American financial system became based on what were called railroad bonds. And if you've taken a history class, you may know that as well, especially in the United States, you may be familiar with railroad bonds. And they are part of the reason that many railroad companies ended up going bankrupt, actually, during the financial panic of 1873. But the amount of investment the US received at the time did create that precedent for kind of a global economy. It just really pushed it that far during the time. Managerial, of course, engineers had a lot to learn. This is a new technology, inventors were putting it on the market. And if you're trying to make it more efficient and be proactive with the system that you have, you kind of have to learn fast on your feet. As the system grew, complexity, of course, grew. Daily operations had to be split, and the field of statistics grew, and the importance of organization and rapid decision making were very essential. And this is to make sure that all strategies adopted to continue this trend of forward movement for trains and their development were on track. And then there's gotta be some puns in there.
Shameful.
It's not. It's great.
Shame.
It's topical. And then personal, the burgeoning railroad system was also used as a contributor to modern career paths. So at 18, young men would just start working for a railroad company. It was the most prominent thing. It's like entering into a really aggressive trade. If you're
Totally.
like if you're near a shipyard, maybe you just r drive right into the shipyard and that's what you do for your 40 years of service or whatever the case may be. In this case, it was railroads, and they would stay there till they retired, work up the ranks like you would any other job. And some would even start out working labor on the physical tracks, eventually jump to engineering, and then transition from statistical work to kind of like bureaucrats at central headquarters and like navigating the management of the railways. So it was very lucrative for the economy, but also very important for the individuals that lived there because that was their main source of income. So of course, as
Side
well,
note,
yeah, what you got?
sorry, I know there's a delay.
I
But side note, I think it also built a lot of generational wealth that we're still
Yeah.
seeing today in terms of like the Rockefellers and
Yep.
a bunch of the other like big railroad tycoons of the time. Like they were the billionaires, they were the Jeff Bezos, you
Yep.
know, they
It's
were the
true.
ones putting pools in their houses for the first time.
It's true. Yeah, with a train track out
So
back.
just like, right, you know, exactly. So like, I think that was the other end of the
Yeah.
spectrum, I guess, is
Agreed.
all I'm trying to say.
No, you're absolutely right. Again, because that was the source, you had, it's like the railroad bonds, you had to invest in it. And a lot of people did, and it made sense that they did. And for the pedestrians, us common folk, at the surface level, this was all an ingenious invention that allowed people to travel across the country. People could now get across the United States or Britain, even. I mean, still, we borrowed their idea in the first place. And now you could even sit comfortably in a train cart and go where you needed to go. This is instead of getting on your horse, having to tack your horse, having to make sure you have enough supplies for you and your horse and where you're going, and also make sure that you have some kind of lodging in between because you're out in the wilderness. You also have to make sure you know where the heck you're going. At least the track is going in literally the only direction it can. And so this was more comfortable. You could jump on a train with your friends and travel to a large store to make purchases and bring it all back very conveniently. Tickets were inexpensive, so it was also viable for all kinds of monetary brackets and income levels. It offered the freedom to explore, like we talked about, and expand your knowledge on the world that you were living in. And much like air travel allows us to visit, other continents and experience new cultures, trains also allowed people to escape the small town and see what else was out there. Maybe, that small town life wasn't for them and they wanted to go to a different city. So you just hop on a train and say goodbye to your parents and hope for the best, There were, of course, things to consider as advantages, more specifically the luxury. So you could eat, sleep, read, spacious room, hanging out, don't have to worry about leading a horse anywhere, like we said. Cost, like we said, was also very cheap. And then safety. So for the time, trains offered a safer way to travel even against water travel. We haven't talked about boats yet, but boats were a thing, obviously, like well before trains were, and significantly more dangerous of for the time than trains were, even when they were first invented. So,
Agreed.
and then I will speak very briefly, because we did touch on this. I do want to discuss the actual impact of the Civil War very quickly with trains. So much of this expansion for the railroads, just for context, happened in the north. So we've got the Baltimore Railroad is in the north. The Ohio Railroad is in
Right.
the north of the United States, if you're not sure. What? You've
And
got to look.
this might be exactly what you're about to say, but like I vaguely remember from history class like a million years ago that that was one of the major reasons that the North like was able to win. It was because they
Yeah.
had majority of the railroads.
It's exactly true. So the South constructed railroads themselves, but they had not even close to the connections between the railroads that the North did. And of course, this would have a major significance. So the Civil War began in April of 1861 here in America. And in previous battles, like the Revolutionary War, it was just kind of fought wherever the people were, like proximity, basically. And the victors of the battle would just take advantage of the city's resources and move on to expand their reach and continue trudging on physically on foot. In the Civil War, however, trains allowed soldiers to transport what they needed to far-off locations, and battles were fought in desolate areas. You weren't just stepping into town and, I don't know, confronting the sheriff or something. You were out in the wilderness now because you now had the ability to get not only men but resources in those areas. And it was considered, because of this, that it was kind of like more like a modern warfare type, because that makes sense. You're no longer just on foot, just trudging it along. And the railroads were then lifelines for both Union and Confederate armies because they delivered the munitions and food, etc. The North specifically targeted southern railways, though, to interfere with those supply chains. So now we have an extra additive, kind of like a war strategy almost, where now you're like, oh, well, I can affect exactly where their stuff is coming through and make it more difficult for them to receive it. And the better a commander knew all of the details of these rail networks, the better chance they had at making these effective tactical decisions. So it really became full strategy and not just whip out the gun and shoot, you know?
Right.
This became strategic. Not that war is good. I don't want to like pose it like that,
No.
but it does kind of introduce this concept.
Well, and it's also similar to like, how in the Revolutionary War, sorry, the delay.
Yeah, no, you're good.
Like in the Revolutionary War, they all like lined up and they were wearing like the British were wearing their red coats and the, Americans were wearing like whatever. And they all just lined up and like shot each other. Obviously, that's like not the case anymore. We've
No,
evolved.
we have evolved.
We've moved on.
Different methods to destroy each other. Perfect.
I know. Just
Different, just
delightful.
yeah. But you're right. It revolutionized, haha, the war settings and the strategic planning by the commanders, etc. So Union General William Sherman understood the vital importance of the railroad systems himself, and after the Battle of Atlanta, Sherman instructed his men to heat and bend the Confederate rail tracks into a necktie design around the trunk of a tree so that they could not be easily repaired. That is savage, okay? Do you know how much work it takes to take an iron rail track that has been bolted to the ground and wrap that sucker around a freaking tree? I'm
He said,
sorry,
bet.
you said that. So, to Blair's point earlier, this is one of the main reasons that the Confederates did lose the war. Their economy was mainly agrarian. They did not see railroads as useful or as necessitated as the North did, because the North was booming. They had all the manufacturing, and this is the way that the North, operated. This was not the same for the South. In turn, the railroads that were available were old and lacked that innovation that the North had, so resources became scarce, transporting goods was challenging, etc., etc., etc. So, around 4 years after the Civil War began, the railroad network in the South had completely collapsed. And this just proves how advantageous that the trains and the railway system were, and how integral they were into the society's almost unbalanced at this time. So, like we said, the North has really integrated it, South not so much. So once the South remained, once it was over, the South did remain in shambles for quite a while, and they had to kind of destroy and just get rid of the old networks that they had. And the act of destroying them was instrumental in just ending it completely, which, but it did eventually recover. And now, obviously, today, there's tons of train systems around that we utilize and all that wonderful stuff.
Tons is a strong word, I
I
would
mean,
say.
we have a an acceptable amount for the moment, but it is not ideal.
Okay.
It has
The last,
significant
I've
room for
never
improvement.
once. Yes. Okay. All right. That's where we'll leave it.
Okay. Well, with that, we'll leave it there. The next section is going to talk about the Transcontinental Railway and the evolution from the steam engine to what we now use prominently today, as well as any modern train tracks and rails and locomotives that we have. And we'll see you in the second half.
As you may know, we have all suffered from mainstream podcasts and live streams with good, reliable Wi-Fi. This has caused countless views and followers for these influencers and created large communities who engage regularly on their platforms.
If you're tired of having quality sound, video, and overall material for consumption, we've got you covered here at Mediocre Content Podcast.
Introducing Blair's Crappy Wi-Fi.
Have your podcast editor in literal tears each time you try to record. With Blair's crappy Wi-Fi, that's me, you will have to edit every few moments of absolute silence as Blair is constantly dropping from the call.
You can even use Blair's crappy Wi-Fi on live streams and have your sound echo into the abyss and your video drop, preventing viewers from seeing or hearing you. Because why would they want to?
To purchase Blair's crappy Wi-Fi, you can send your application to mediocrecontentpodcast@gmail.com, simply stating a time Blair's crappy Wi-Fi has made your experience listening to podcasts and streams absolutely awesome.
We look forward to hearing from you, and good luck making it through the rest of this pod with, you guessed it,
Blair's crappy Wi-Fi. Obviously, this is a fake ad, even though my Wi-Fi is, in fact, crappy. Feel free to email us all the same, but there's no way I'd be willing to give this crappy Wi-Fi to anyone, not even my worst enemy. Cheers!
Welcome back, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the break. Hopefully, I ended up finding the Blair's crappy Wi-Fi ad so you could listen to that while you wait. it's just ridiculous. So, like I said, in this half, we're going to talk about the Transcontinental Railway, which was built after the Civil War, and we'll also talk about the evolution of locomotive power to gain a sense of where we're at today, what we have today, and where potential projections come from, because I know Blair actually had this in the good news at some point, but even the U.S. is trying to catch up in terms of the train situation, and we actually have laws and bills being put through to kind of boost that in the states right now. So this is kind of topical as well. So
somebody call Joe Biden.
Somebody please. After the Civil War, the country did need a path forward to unite the two regions of the country because that's important. And the Reconstruction era did bring sweeping changes to the South, including a plan to actually move it from agrarian, which is like the farming, and industrialize it like the North had already become. Construction began for a dramatic expansion of the rail system through the South, and of course this would help it to also kind of come out of hiding, come out of isolation, and create fundamental jobs for those that lived there. And when the rails were finished, passenger travel was infrequent and trains were mostly only hauling cotton crops at the time, but it did help try and push the South into a more modern way of running their economy, especially after such a devastating war for them. And in 1869, the first transcontinental railway would be completed, and this would link the eastern United States with essentially the rest of the entirety of the country at the time. So that was huge.
Yay!
Yay! We did it! And of course, being able to interconnect with each other grew the nation. It healed some of the literal and physical and mental battle wounds that had occurred. And the whole economy would turn from, you know, mine to ours. And that's lovely and beautiful. And trains did that. So good for trains.
We love that for trains.
She really did that. She ate.
She really did. She ate and left no crumbs.
She ate. Train said, bet I will create unity.
Bet. We're now Gen Z, just so you guys know. We are Gen Z. We are no longer millennials.
Gotta be hip with the times, you know? Gotta try. As I say, hip.
Yeah, right. I know. not the skit with Timothy charcuterie board and Pete Davidson.
It's true.
Coming to mind, being like, yeah.
Oh my God. When you said that, I was thinking Butternut Cumberbitch. I know there's a lag too.
Oh, my favorite one, and I heard a drag queen say this.
Oh.
It was William Eyelash for Billie
Oh my
Eilish.
Gosh, yes. So good. Top tier. Top tier.
I think so.
Okay, well, much like the evolution of hip words, there was also the evolution of locomotive power. While steam-powered...
Great transition.
Thank you.
Great transition.
Steam-powered locomotive is mostly responsible for the explosion of train use from the 19th to 20th centuries, but there were other mediums through which you could power the trains, and that included electricity and diesel. We are going to start with horses, however, because they were still a very instrumental part of our evolution and our economy, if you will. So in the beginning, as mentioned, horses were the main source of this, quote, locomotive power. They were pretty much reliable. There's not a whole lot else you could say. They were technically safe for transporting goods. But of course, on the roads, you're still going to have potholes and bumps, and it was difficult if a horse got injured and you couldn't just not have the stuff. And things like that, relying on the horses, created a bit of an issue in terms of total reliability for not having any issues. So steam-powered was one of the main driving power forces, like we talked about. And it was the prototype. It was part of the Golden Age. It created its power through steam, and that was great, and that was beautiful. But it was also the main power source for nearly 100 years before we made any additional improvements, which at that point would be diesel. Electricity, like the Rzug, was one of the first of these innovations, and they would use those steep hills as kind of that driving force. So as you're running, it's creating this electric power and pushing it forward with batteries. So that was in like the 1800s, 1851. It was effective for short distances, but the batteries for the time were very weak, and so it didn't really provide reliable long-term travel like the steam engine did. And so even though they would become common around the world, and we see this in like subways or metro stations or, you know, those kinds of transports, what would actually become the identifier for long travel and reliable travel would be the diesel in the late 1800s. The design proved difficult, though, and it wouldn't be until 1937 that a North American railway would actually utilize these diesel locomotives. And once they were introduced, many people realized how effective diesel was, and it was kind of like this superior option to steam-powered, and this was because of three main reasons. The first is labor. So instead of having a whole team trying to burn coal to create the steam to make the train move, diesel-powered locomotives only required a single person to operate the entire vessel, which was huge. It was also more attractive work, so it was quieter, weatherproof. You didn't have all the coal dust, the heat from the fire. You didn't feel gross after you came out of working on the train. So that was obviously a selling point for people that had to run them.
Definitely. Yeah.
It'd be disgusting. Maintenance, of course. So again, if you have steam, you're also using coal, and that stuff gets everywhere, and it's hard to inspect, it's hard to really clean, and it needed to be lubricated very aggressively. Diesel trains required basically no maintenance month to month, and it was just like, is it still running? Perfect. Let's just keep going. Which is great. And then fuel costs. So people have argued the point that some saw diesel engines as kind of like that cheaper alternative. If you factor in the lowered maintenance costs and kind of like the notion that coal and water weren't needed, so you didn't need that extra resource to actually make it run, and potentially heaps of it to keep it running for a long time and long distances, it is kind of reasonable that diesel would be more efficient. And I guess also, if you only need one guy to run it, you also don't need the extra cost of the manpower to keep shoveling it in and making sure that it's, you know, running properly. So that's why. And the diesel trains, once they were introduced, they just took over. General Electric paved the way for the mass production of these locomotives, and they replaced the steam-powered ones almost unequivocally, and the majority of what you ride now are electric or diesel-type trains. So it just depends on where you're going and how far and etc. So travel changed for passengers. Rail travel is similar to air travel because it is considered somewhat of a luxury and kind of an elegant way for people to travel.
And while air travel remains the most, you know, popular choice, to be fair, the history of rail passenger transportation is extremely short. Riding on a train in the early 1800s was surprising, almost shocking to many passengers, and most of the time they were used to the laborious and tiring travel methods because you were, again, on the freaking horse and you'd probably be sore and tired and sad. And train travel proved to be completely different, of course. You had first class parlors and you'd have like these crazy ornate designs. You'd have velvet cushions and living in the laps of luxury.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. Of course, you would also be able to eat, and a lot of onboard meals for the time included trout, antelope berries, which I do not know what it is, and champagne. So you just pop the bottle and you're riding away and you're waving at the horseman as you pass by on the tracks, which is kind of sad. And these parlors were available to pretty much anyone who could afford them. So anyone who wanted to experience this, there was definitely an opportunity for you to do so because it was still very cheap to do. Of course, kind of like today, where you've got like first class or things like that, they did have kind of similar things. You could have a second or third class version. It would be less luxurious, of course, but definitely still more comfortable considering to other methods. And I'm kind of sad, I'm gonna be honest, that we don't have these really cool long distance, like ornate trains anymore. Like
I know.
if you've been on an Amtrak, I mean, it's okay. You still get to go through like pretty areas, but it's kind of sad that you're not like living in a lap of luxury.
I will tell you, I took a train from London to Paris,
Ooh.
and it was so comfortable. First of all,
Nice.
I was with like a group of people, so we and it was only like it was like a speed train, so there was no stops.
Nice.
But there were huge windows, and you sit in these comfy chairs with like a table in the middle, and you just like take your little book out and you read
Nice.
and look at what's happening outside, and it's just so calm and like comfortable and nice and not at all like an airplane.
That's amazing. I love that. Yeah,
Yeah,
that's what I would
yeah.
want.
It was really good. It was nice. It wasn't like luxurious necessarily, but it felt like comfortable and nice, you know?
Yeah, of
It felt
course.
like I was in my living room just like watching the world go by. It was
Yeah.
great.
That's fun. That's what I like about trains, though, is you really do just get to like sit and look and appreciate the things that you're experiencing. On planes, I'm just hyperventilating the whole time. And on cars, if you're driving, that's kind of hard to do and watch the road at the same time. So.
I mean, yeah, as are most people.
As are most people, probably, hopefully. So similar to what can I compare this to? So it's like,
A warm summer's day. No, I'm just kidding.
maybe. What I can say is a lot of things that are invented and take off very quickly and are very popular for an extended amount of time, sometimes we outpace ourselves and they become less popular against other new things, of course, and it's not necessarily the newest, the most amazing invention that's on the market. And so after the Great Depression, rail travel just kind of derailed. Because
Stop.
I can't stop, won't stop. Automobiles were a huge factor, and Blair's talked about this a little bit as well, where the invention, especially in the United States, was extremely popularized and profound in its effect on trains. Because now, instead of having to, similar to like a boat or a plane, instead of saying, here's where I want to go, now I have to go at this specific time and I have to buy a ticket and I have to wait in line. And you know, now you just say, oh, I want to go. Let me just jump in my car and I will take myself there. So of course that became kind of that jumping point for trains as well, because automobiles were very personalized and convenient and private as well, because now you're not traveling with a bunch of other people. You could do whatever you want to do and not worry about the people you're around. The interstate highway system then, which was created because of that boom in automobiles, was introduced in 1950s, and this
made that hit to railways that much stronger because now people had the ability to travel freely at those bigger distances. So now it's not just, oh, I can go from town to town. It's like I can go from Virginia to California if I want to. And that was huge because now you've got the privacy, you don't have to pay, you don't have to worry about time frame, you just go. Air travel, of course, it's faster. It's just what it is. Air travel is so much faster. Trains are, if you
1,000%.
trains, they're not as expensive on trains, of course, but it does take an extremely long time, especially given the fact that most modern trains, even if you're going long distances, do have stops in between. So even if you have a layover flight, it's still going to be faster than a train. So at least in the United States, I'll caveat it and say, at least in the United States right now, that is the faster option is air travel.
Yeah. I think
Yeah.
that's a good caveat to make because
Yeah.
I would rather like if trains were a little bit more faster, like
Right. Like a
if it
bullet
was if
train.
it like a day and a half to get across the country instead of like a week, then I would be fine. And I would much rather take a train. And I think a lot of people would because you don't have to go through security. You don't have to do the whole like uncomfortable seating arrangement thing,
You
you
get to see
know.
the states as you
Right. You
pass
get to
through
see
them.
the scenery, you
Yeah,
know?
agreed.
I don't know.
I agree. So at least for the United States, that's the one caveat I'll make for now. And then regulations. So one of the most significant factors, even outside of all of those pieces, that contributed to the decline of the train travel was the questionable business practices that rail owners took part in. So many railroad companies became monopolistic, and a lot of the public became disillusioned with traveling on the railways as a whole. It didn't get into a lot of details specifically, but I'm sure if you dug and you were really curious about some of the decisions and company protocols and changes that happened during that time, I'm sure it would become, kind of come to light what was happening at the time. And industry just kind of had other ways of moving around. So that, it's just kind of what happens. You got more inventions, more things take precedence, and that's just what happened. That's what happened.
It is.
So the final thing I just want to kind of round us out with is what we have today. Like, what is still available? What is on the market? What you could get involved with in this train world? So I have three different categories. I have types of locomotives, I have types of trains, and then types of rails because there are differences there. And different trains require different rails to function on, which is probably obvious, but I feel like I need to say it.
Yes, definitely.
So, steam locomotives, we'll start with the locomotives, are mostly currently used at like theme parks and museums, mostly for display and the experience. So like at Dollywood, they have a operating steam engine that you can ride and experience, and it's honestly so freaking cool. It really is. But if you're looking for like a train that you're going to be riding to and fro the majority of the time, it's actually going to fall into the diesel locomotive category. And that's because they can carry these large loads, like we've talked about. They have lots of materials and goods they can move, but they're also super efficient even for people travel, and they can go those long distances. There's lots of tracks that connect them, so it makes a lot of sense. The electric locomotives are used mostly for subway trains, trams, metros, and other high-speed transit that don't have to go very far. So you're going to see a lot of these in the cities, obviously. Combined engines. This is unique because it will actually take the electrical and the diesel concepts and tackle these wider ranges of terrains. So if a train has to go from A to B, it's not so much the fact that it has to go from A to B. It's like what's in between there that train will have to go through. Is it going through snow, mountains, desert? What are we talking about, right?
Yeah.
So some of those that need to go those extra distances in those more aggressive terrains will be combined engines just to make it more efficient and probably a little safer. Types of trains, though, are like a shorter list. It's like you've got those types of locomotives, and then you've got the trains that are powered by those locomotives, right? So just kind of want to figure out where we're talking about here. So freight, goods, liquids, gases, industrial type trains. Inner city,
That's the public transport, so your subways, etc. Rapid transport, we're talking high-speed trains, so that's the 300 kilometers an hour type trains. You got your short slash long distance, so these have sleeping cars, dining cars, necessities. Trams, little bit of slower train, and it's usually in more urban areas. They are powered by the electricity locomotive and mostly for public transport. And then you've got your mine trains or even mine carts to a degree. And this is something that's going up underneath the earth, wherever the rock and coal or other materials are, and bringing the materials out of the caves. And then finally, the types of rails. Your common rail, got the iron railways that you're probably used to seeing. You have electrified, high speed, maglev, which is the magnet high speed travel, and then monorail, which is the slow trains or trams that are not utilizing the magnets. So that's all I have on
Like
trains.
the one at Disney.
Yes, exactly. I hope this was informative, entertaining, or otherwise. And if not, I totally get it. But I love trains, and I have put off. I really wanted to ride the train here in the Northeast. They have one in New Hampshire where you could drive through the fall leaves and have that like experience
Oh,
of,
that's
I
so
know. And there's
fun.
like beautiful lakes and things that you get to drive through, and you have a lunch or whatever. So I would love to do something fun like that on a train one day.
You should do the Napa wine train.
Oh, I would love to do a wine
You should
train.
do it. Ugh,
I
so
wine
fun.
all the time.
That's right. And
That's right.
we don't even drink the wine. We just like wine the
We
entire
just
time.
physically wine.
Yeah.
That's what they listen to us do every week on this
And
pod.
people are like, these girls are like ridiculous.
I
We
don't think
hate
they
them.
I don't think they understood what the wine train was for.
Right.
But of course,
All
we
right.
would love to know how you guys feel about it as well.
Yes, we shall. Feel free to send us an email with any questions, comments, concerns, or episode topic suggestions, or any suggestions for my Wi-Fi. That'd be great too.
Please,
To
God.
mediocrecontentpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram or TikTok at Mediocre Content Podcast. We're also on Twitch at Mediocre Content Podcast. And our Twitch stream is every other Thursday. And it is at 3 p.m. PST, 6 p.m. EST, or 11 p.m. BST. And don't forget to rate us 5 stars wherever you listen to podcasts. And we will see you next week. This has been Mediocre Content.
Thanks so much for listening. Cheers!
Cheers!